Risk Management Process. The ASCM Supply Chain Dictionary defines risk management as the identification, assessment, and prioritization of risks, followed by coordinated and economical application of resources to minimize, monitor, and control the probability and or impact of unfortunate events, or to maximize the realization of opportunities. Next, we will explore ISO 31000 risk management, risk assessment techniques, and then discuss a generic risk management process. ISO 31000. Organizations can use the ISO 31000 standard to develop a comprehensive risk management process. According to the ASCM Supply Chain Dictionary, ISO 31000 is a standard developed by the International Organization for Standardization, ISO, that outlines principles and a set of guidelines to manage risk in any endeavor. The standard includes guidelines for understanding risk, developing a risk management policy, integrating risk management into organizational processes, including accountability and responsibility, and establishing internal and external risk communication processes. ISO 31000 is not a management system standard and is not intended or appropriate for certification purposes or regulatory or contractual use. ISO 31000 principles. ISO 31000 follows a set of principles that help develop and implement transparent and credible risk management systems. These principles are the key to successful risk management. They can be paraphrased as follows. Risk management adds value to the organization and protects that value. It is integral to the organization's operational and decision-making processes. It unambiguously addresses uncertainty in an orderly, structured, comprehensive, and well-timed manner. It makes use of the best available information. It is customized to the organization and accounts for human and cultural factors. It is inclusive of all stakeholders, auditable, and transparent. It has a cyclical framework that allows for continual improvement, organizational learning, and dynamic responsiveness to changing environments. ISO 31000 Framework. The ISO 31000 framework, at a high level, is an iterative process that starts with a board and executive level mandate and commitment toward risk management, starting with governance. This mandate should be based on the ISO 31000 principles just mentioned. With this in mind, the ISO 31000 framework starts with an area for leadership and commitment, which provides guidance on designing, integrating, implementing, evaluating, and improving the framework. This step leads to the customization and design of the process framework, which is then implemented, monitored, reviewed, and continually improved based on review results, which leads back to further customization and design. In the implementation phase, the framework contains a set of sub-processes that are also iterative, as shown in Exhibit 8-18. Actual ISO process names differ slightly. Exhibit 8-18, ISO 31000 Process Framework for Implementation Phase, Generic Risk Management Process. Here are the basic steps in most risk management processes. Identify and document risks. Document causes of known risks and their relative impact and effect in a risk register, a worksheet that lists all risks and has columns for various attributes. Note that a work culture that avoids discussing problems will also have trouble with risk identification. Categorize and prioritize risks. Categorizing risks helps put them into groups that might be similarly addressed and ensures that risk identification is comprehensive. Some organizations form separate risk teams to deal with sets of broad risk categories, such as a team to deal with frequent internal operational risks, for example, supply, demand, warehousing, transportation, another team for external risks, economic, governance, etc., and another for determining how to address natural risks, flooding, droughts, weather. The latter two teams will likely be more strategic and may meet less often. Qualitatively assess each risk by its relative impact, both severity and time to recover, and probability, likelihood of occurrence. Exhibit 8-19 shows how this can be done as a heat map with levels 1 through 5 on each scale. Multiplying the probability value by the impact value results in a risk rating level, for example 5x5 equals 25, for a risk rating range of 1 to 25 on the scale. A heat map such as the one shown may avoid these calculations and instead use color coding or shading to indicate low, medium, and high risk areas, which can help guide response procedures. Organizations will set thresholds for risk levels based on their risk appetite, for example, risk-seeking or risk-averse. Urgency or other factors such as time to recovery might also be used to rate a risk higher or lower. For example, a high probability but short time to recovery may be acceptable. Note that a heat map is organization-specific. The risks shown below are, for example, only. Exhibit 8-19, Probability and Impact Matrix, Heat Map. For example, a capacity shortage is often high probability and high impact, while border delays or port congestion might be moderate in both categories, while minor traffic accidents would be low in both. When rating risks, work to avoid common forms of bias that could lead to incorrect evaluations. For example, confirmation bias is when one heavily weights evidence confirming one's current beliefs and ignores opposite evidence. In another example, after a rare risk event occurs, people may treat it as more likely. For example, Toyota did not abandon Lean due to earthquakes, but it does have some dual sourcing arrangements that are geographically diverse. Quantitatively analyze risk if desired. The impact of a risk can also be put in monetary terms. Using the same basic formula, the percentage probability times the monetary impact results in an expected monetary value, EMV. A risk and opportunity, R and O, analysis is a sum of the EMVs for all of the risks and opportunities for a strategy or project. If a net sum is positive, then the rewards outweigh the risks. Note that if there are business investments or risk mitigation costs, then the formula becomes. In the formula, net impact is the impact plus the cost. Note that only costs that differ between the alternatives are included. For an opportunity, this would be the probability times the return after deducting the capital investment. For a threat that involved purchasing insurance, it would be the probability times the insurance cost, including the cost of the deductible. This could be compared to the alternative of no insurance, which would be probability times the potential loss. Note that we are not comparing the cost of insurance with no risk event occurring to the cost of insurance and that risk event occurring, since the percentage probability already takes this will it or won't it happen part of the analysis into account. Whether or not to get insurance or to invest in training, etc. at all is what is being decided. The size of the premium plus deductible or other mitigation cost is a factor in whether or not this is a cost-effective choice. Another type of quantitative analysis is to model the situation using a sensitivity analysis or scenario. When a risk has a response cost or an opportunity has an upfront cost, this can be factored into the analysis. For example, establishing a formal partnership with a supplier could result in an increase in revenues of $10 million in the first year in the best case, but in the worst case, it could bring in only $1 million that year. Assume also that there is a $5 million upfront investment. This cost is deducted from the impact prior to multiplying it by the probability. If the net result is positive, then it is an opportunity. If the net result is negative, then it is a threat, negative risk. The formula for calculating an EMV when there is an initial cost follows along with a continuation of the prior example. Pick a risk management strategy, risk response. There are four basic risk management strategies, also called risk responses: accept, avoid, transfer, and mitigate. Develop preventive and contingent action plans. Preventive action plans avoid, transfer, or mitigate a risk before it occurs. Contingent action plans identify what to do to get back up and running after a risk event occurs. These plans may need a dry run, much like a fire drill. Both preventive and contingent plans are needed. Get funding and assign roles. Both preventive and contingent action plans require funding and assignment to specific individuals. There may also be a general fund for unknown risks. Implement preventive action plans. These are often implemented as projects with their own plans, goals, success measures, and management. For example, this could be building a centralized warehouse for unpredictable demand items so decentralized capacity will be available for high demand items. Regularly monitor risk and meet to review risk and risk response status, applying control as needed. Identify new risks, changes in probability or impact, and the status/efficacy of responses, updating reports as required. some risks will be irrelevant and can be removed from the risk register. This way, the register remains a living document for risks that have increased in priority or for responses that are considered not effective enough. The team will need to form action plans to ensure that monitoring is followed up by controlling. This risk management process weighs the probability against the impact so that the response should not cost more than the risk itself would have. However, this decision is not just about wise use of risk response resources. Many complex factors come into play, including legal, regulatory, liability, contractual, or industry requirements that may supersede cost. Nevertheless, it is vital to understand that there is a trade-off between the cost of the risk and the cost of preventing the risk. For example, if management wants to reduce the risk of a stockout for a top-selling item, safety stock can be added to the distribution channel. Then the trade-off decision is to determine how much the organization is willing to pay in extra inventory carrying costs to offset this risk. The organization will analyze performance objectives, financial goals, channel capacities, and market positioning. This brings us back to the efficient frontier concept. The reward has to be promising enough to accept the risk, as discussed elsewhere. Risk is related to the uncertainty of the outcome of a business strategy, process, or event. As the risk increases, the potential for financial loss also increases. In general, organizations and individuals will tend to accept higher risk only when the potential for the reward is also higher. Therefore, in general, if the cost of the response is greater than the risk-adjusted cost of the risk, the EMV, the best response will be to accept the risk or avoid doing the activity that generates the risk. Transfer is also an acceptable response in the case of commonly insured risks, as these low-probability, high-impact risks are often so disruptive and costly that insurance is purchased anyway. However, the level of coverage versus premiums and deductibles can be assessed. An example of when avoidance is the best alternative is if the organization is considering adding geographically diversified redundant suppliers, so if one has an issue, you can avoid that issue by switching quickly to a different supplier. If the cost outweighs the benefits after the probability of occurrence is factored in, it will not be a good strategy. Instead, the organization may need to get creative, such as having several suppliers each provide a portion of the high-demand items or logistics services, with contracts to increase supply by a certain percentage within a given time period to guard against losing one of them. A few flexible suppliers might be contracted to provide a whole range of low-demand products if need arises.